Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's special edition of Riding the Storm Out. I'm Pastor Paul Blair. My good friend and co-pastor Dan Fisher is on the road this week, but we've got a very special broadcast for you that really is critically important. You know, there was an old saying that says, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And we can either learn from history and not do the same mistakes that our earlier eras have done, or we can learn from history and imitate what they've done and do things the right way if they had a good idea. Well, if you look back to the origin of the birth of the United States of America, at one time we were 13 colonies. And the British king, which was the king of the British citizens living in North America, was becoming tyrannical. He was implementing unjust laws over the people. And they appealed to him with the First Continental Congress. They gathered in Philadelphia in 1774, opened in an extended time of prayer, and such men as Patrick Henry, George Washington, John Adams, Sam Adams were all together at this meeting, having met for the first time at this meeting because they didn't have email. They couldn't travel by flight. I mean, it was a difficult task to get from the northern colonies to the southern colonies. So this gathering in Philadelphia is the first time most of them had met each other. And they were trying to determine what they should do about these, what they called the intolerable acts that were being poured out upon the colonists by Great Britain. They weren't being given their citizenship rights. They weren't being treated as British citizens. They were being treated as second-class citizens or even worse. Well, they tried to appeal to the king. They played within the rules of the law. And they sent a petition of resolves, a declaration of resolves to the king, asking for him to relent and start respecting their rights as British citizens. They agreed to get back together again the following year if things didn't go their way. And of course they didn't. As a matter of fact, tensions rose and things got worse. There was the Battle of Lexington in Concord, and there were, for the first time, shots fired between the colonists and the British Army. Well, they got together in what was called the Second Continental Congress in May in 1775. And again, they were appealing to the king for peace and for their rights as British citizens to be respected. And they sent what was called the Olive Branch Petition to the King of England, which was their king. And in this, they stated their loyalty to the king. They restated and emphasized it to the king and in Great Britain. And again, they appealed to the king to start treating them with dignity, with their British citizenship rights. But at the same time, they were wise enough to have a fallback option. I'll call it a nuclear option. They commissioned George Washington from Virginia to become the commander-in-chief of the newly raised Continental Army as a just-in-case. Just in case the king insisted on making them into slaves and not guaranteeing their rights as British citizens, they had a fallback. They weren't going to become slaves. It would be literally over their dead bodies. That was a line that they weren't willing to cross. So at the same time they were pinning this Olive Branch petition, restating their loyalty to the king as British citizens and appealing for justice, at the same time they had the nuclear option just in case the king insisted on tightening down the screws of tyranny. Well, of course, we know what happened. July of 1776, the king had disregarded the Olive Branch petition and the colonies declared their independence and 13 colonies became 13 United States. And of course, the rest is history. Well, what we don't know is that the events that we have lived through these last 2 years have not been accidental. This whole pandemic has been a long laid out plan by a group of super billionaire elites that control everything from banking to technology to communications to healthcare. Literally, these are the men that are behind the scenes controlling the world through finances, men and women, actually. It's called the World Economic Forum. And they have long had plans of how to gain control and centralize planning of not just America, but the whole world through the use of either climate change, an existential threat, or a pandemic, an existential threat. And lo and behold, what we've seen over the last 2 years has all been part of a plan. This video will detail the background on the World Economic Forum. It's 30 minutes. You need to watch it from start to finish, and you'll have understanding of what's going on. And then I ask you to go to our website, Declaration for Liberty. That's the number four, DeclarationForLiberty.com. And I want you to read it. You will have already seen the video. There's other resources there that you may want to access. And then I want you to look at our Declaration for Liberty. And I'd like to ask you to sign it and join with us as we are not going to go into global communism. The United States of America were birthed in freedom, and the United States of America need to stand on those principles of liberty. So watch this video and share it with your friends. And then next week, we'll be back to a regular edition of Riding the Storm Out. God bless you and enjoy.
Now is the historical moment, the time, not only to fight severe virus, but to shape the system.
We have a unique but rapidly shrinking window of opportunity to learn lessons and reset ourselves on a more sustainable path.
What is it that would make it so that history would look at this crisis as the great opportunity for reset?
The Great Reset is a welcome recognition that this human tragedy must be a wake-up call.
The world's problems fit on three sides of a triangle. It's one versus many, man versus nature, and the unfortunate foundation is long-term versus short-term.
Any recovery stimulus should have green conditions attached to it.
We have to change our economies dramatically in the next 20 or 30 years, and the next 10 years is absolutely decisive.
The recovery has to be greener than any of the previous recoveries.
To state the obvious, we meet with the eyes of history upon us, and the profound questions before us. It's simple. Will we act? Will we do what is necessary? Will we seize the enormous opportunity before us? In an age where this pandemic is made so painfully clear that no nation can wall itself off from borderless threats, we know that none of us can escape the worst that's yet to come if we fail to seize this moment.
We're committed to conserving the majesty of God's creation and the natural beauty of our world. But to embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse. These alarmists always demand the same thing: absolute power to dominate, transform, and control every aspect of our lives. We will never let radical socialists destroy our economy, wreck our country.
Wise leaders always put the good of their own people and their own country first. The future does not belong to globalists. The future belongs to patriots.
The General Assembly routinely votes 185 against the United States on almost everything right now.
Clearly, I consider the Trump administration a danger to the world, but I regard it as a purely temporary phenomenon that will disappear in 2020.
Secondly, we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Thank you. So the currency system is in flux globally, and that's part of what's happening. It's part of why there's a demand for reset. In anticipation of this, though, for the last 20 or 30 years, the central banks have been moving significant money out of the sovereign governments. So we have known for many decades that there was going to be a problem when the baby boomers retired. And the reality is the central banks have moved that money out of the government. I call it the financial coup. And there's been tremendous funny business going on with federal accounts in the United States for a long time. And we're now in the consolidation where if all that money has been moved out of the government and the retirees want it, you need an excuse as to why it's not there. You know, enter the magic virus. So from a financial standpoint, COVID-19 is helping provide the air cover for the fact that many of the promises that have been made are not going to be kept. The Western democracies in the United States have been run with a two-pronged financial system. On one side, you have private banks with the central bank, the Federal Reserve, who are managing monetary policy. On the other side of the house, you have an electorate voting for representatives who manage the tax flow and the credits that relate to that, so the treasury market. So you have this balance of power between the people and the bankers. And now what is happening under the guise of COVID-19 is the bankers have decided they no longer want to share power with the electorate or the people's representatives, and whether through FASB 56 or levering the governments up so they're deeply in debt and dependent on the central banks have decided essentially to take over. And the ultimate sort of completion of this will be when they introduce digital currencies controlled and operated by the central bank. Why is that important? Because they won't be currencies, Dell. They will be a financial control system. To implement that system, they need the vaccine passports. And the goal of the vaccine passports have nothing to do with health. They have to do with implementing a new digital financial transaction system, which is in essence complete control. So I call it a slavery system. Dr. Naomi Wolf said, vaccine passports are the end of human liberty in the West, and she's absolutely right.
Our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
So this is what this means. You will no longer have a currency. You will have a credit at the company store. If they don't want you traveling more than 5 miles from your home, your credit card, your bank account won't work more than 5 miles from your home. If they don't want you, let's say they decided you shouldn't be able to buy pizza, you can't buy pizza. You're talking about complete control, you know, at a very intimate level of both surveillance, because remember, there's no privacy. They'll be able to track every transaction you make. So we're talking about a credit at the company store and literally a slavery system. So this is a plan. It is being engineered. I'm not saying it's 100, you know, they kind of make it up as they go. But if you look at who's responsible at the very top of the global financial system, they are in the room. If you look at the list of participants for the vote for the going direct and the people who put the plan together working for BlackRock, you can see a lot of those players. Now, you know, if you look at the whole going direct, to get the control, the financial control system into place with the passports, you need the pharmaceutical industry, you need the tech industry, you need the telecommunications industry. It's all part of putting together the smart grid, because the smart grid is the hardware and the infrastructure for this financial control grid. So the magic virus, and I'm not saying that there wasn't serious disease, and I'm not saying people weren't getting sick, and I'm not saying we don't have to deal with this, but I assure you The bigger play was a financial reengineering that has absolutely nothing to do with healthcare. Healthcare is the marketing plan for the reengineering of our governance and financial systems. This is a coup. In 1995, an effort was made to get the federal budget in balance, including the retirement obligations. And when it failed, it was described to me by one of the largest pension fund leaders in the country. He said, "You don't understand, they've given up on the country. They're moving all the money out starting in the fall," which was fall 1997, when the $21 trillion started to disappear. So literally, here's the reality. If this is the law of math and actuarial science. If you cannot get a financially responsible solution to your retirement benefits, then you have two choices. You can increase the retirement age, or you can lower life expectancy. It's pure math.
This is a world pandemic. It's a 1 in 100 year event. So you can expect that we will have transmission from time to time, and that's just the way it is. We've got to accept that this is the new world order.
So I want to talk to you today about the future of our species and really the future of life. We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens. Within a century or two, Earth will be dominated by entities that are more different from us than we are different from Neanderthals or from chimpanzees. Because in the coming generations, we will learn how to engineer bodies and brains and minds. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. And if indeed we succeed in hacking and engineering life, this will be not just the greatest revolution in the history of humanity. This will be the greatest revolution in biology since the very beginning of life, 4 billion years ago. For 4 billion years, nothing fundamental changed in the basic rules of the game of life. All of life, for 4 billion years, dinosaurs, amoebas, tomatoes, humans, all of life was subject to the laws of natural selection and to the laws of organic biochemistry. But this is now about to change. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design and the intelligent design of our clouds, the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, these are the new driving forces of evolution. And at the same time, science may enable life, after being confined for 4 billion years to the limited realm of organic compounds, science may enable life to break out into the inorganic realm. So after 4 billion years of organic life shaped by natural selection, we are entering the era of inorganic life shaped by intelligent design. This is why the ownership of data is so important. If we don't regulate it, a tiny elite may come to control not just the future of human societies, but the shape of life forms in the future. The big battle over what we today call privacy will be between privacy and health. Do you give access to what is happening inside your body and brain in exchange for far better healthcare? And my guess is that health will win, hands down. People will give up their privacy in exchange for healthcare, and maybe in many places they won't have a choice. I mean, they won't even get insurance if they are unwilling to give access to what is happening inside their bodies.
Right.
Now, what do you need in order to hack a human being? You need two things. You need a lot of computing power, and you need a lot of data, especially biometric data. Not data about what I buy or where I go, but data about what is happening inside my body and inside my brain. Let's say you live in North Korea, and you have to wear this bracelet, which constantly monitors what is happening inside your body, and you walk into a room, and you see the picture of the dear leader on the wall, and the bracelet can know what is happening to your brain, to your blood pressure, as you see this picture. So this really what is meant by a digital dictatorship.
I mean, it makes 1984 sound positively...
Child's play.
Child's play, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it makes 1984 sound positively...
Child's play. Thank you.
What we see in America is not the accidental buffoonery of a senile man who's usurped the White House. Even a buffoon would accidentally get something right every now and then. The decisions being made are calculated and intended to destroy the dollar, destroy private property ownership, individual liberty, and to destroy American dominance. The goal is centralized power through the World Economic Forum and to replace the dollar with a new digital currency, the central bank digital currency. In other words, the goal is the Great Reset. If we enter the Great Reset, the dollar is done. Your life savings and your retirement, it'll all be gone. You'll own nothing. Meat will be a rare luxury. Mass transportation and high-density public housing will be required. You'll have a social credit score monitored by the government. You'll no longer have unalienable God-given rights. You'll be granted privileges by the government based upon your actions and your thoughts. We've seen even over the course of the last year, the government tell us which businesses are essential and which aren't, which can stay open and which must close. We've seen an election stolen without consequences. We've seen a general commit treason without consequences. A push for vaccine passports. In reality, ladies and gentlemen, we haven't been a republic in a while. We're actually an administrative state run by bureaucracies with initials like the EPA, the DHS, the DEA, and the IRS. But our republic was officially pronounced dead when the Supreme Court refused to hear the Texas lawsuit versus Georgia over election integrity. One of the few things that Article 3 of the Constitution actually said the Supreme Court was created to do, they decided to ignore. The connections between this president and China are well documented. D.C. is doing the bidding of the global leaders from the World Economic Forum. Going back to normal is not an option. The whole objective over the last 2 years was to establish the new normal. In 1787, when asked about the form of government that the people had been given, Benjamin Franklin famously replied to the inquisitive woman, "A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." The United States is the Titanic, ladies and gentlemen. We've hit the iceberg. We are going down. There will be a new normal. But which new normal is still up to us? We either follow the White House and the bureaucratic deep state as all 50 states head into the Great Reset and we're finished, or imagine a confederation of free states that choose to hang on to the Declaration of Independence. With a population of some 140 million people, an $8 trillion GDP, a true free market not run by bureaucracies, a blockchain currency owned by the people and not central banks that's actually backed by gold. Read the attached Declaration for Liberty. Pick it apart if you can, but consider the options. Then sign up and join us. In America, it's supposed to be we the people, and it can be again. I do believe the Lord's coming is soon, but if he tarries for 5 years or 10 years, I want my children and grandchildren to enjoy liberty, not slavery or even martyrdom. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will shrink in the crisis. What will you do? Join us.